What is the perfect story? Does it exist? Is there a tangible formula? Has the perfect story ever been told? And if so, are we simply trying to retell this story over and over? This podcast is called The Midnight Myth, and somewhere between the black of night and the break of dawn, there is a story, and it's perfect. My name is Derek Jones.
And my name is Laurel Hostack.
Welcome to The Midnight Myth. Welcome back to the Midnight Myth, everybody's favorite history, mythology, philosophy, and how those subjects bubble up into our popular storytelling podcast. As always, I am very excited to be back with another Midnight Myth. It feels like ages have transpired since our last record. When was our last episode?
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. It's been a minute, and apologies. We've had a lot of ideas and a lot of things that we've been trying to do. And then we decided that, F it, we're going to hop into the podcast today and we're going to record an episode. And that's just what it is.
Absolutely.
This is a Midnight Myth meditation. So if you are new here, we have a official Midnight Myth episodes. And then every once in a while, we do a meditation where there's something Laurel and I have been thinking about, and we've just want to get into the studio and talk about it. So a little more looser structure, a little more free forming, and an open forum for just one of us or both of us to get some ideas out there. And we've been talking a lot about the importance of the Barbie movie. And we both have seen it. Laurel, you've seen it twice. Keep me honest there. Was that right?
Twice, yeah.
I've seen it once. And we really felt like this was a potential watershed moment for the country and the world as movie-going people, and potentially could be a change on how movies are consumed on a regular basis, as well as we thought that the movie was really awesome. So this is our Midnight Myth meditation on Barbie. We're going to talk about the movie, our thoughts about it, why we think it got made, what we think it what matters in it, what does not matter in it. Is it just a silly movie about toys, or is there something deeper going on there? Super stoked about it. It's been a while since I have seen it, so I might get some details wrong. I apologize in advance if I do, but I'm ready to go. Let's talk all things Barbie Girl in a Barbie world.
Yeah, and Barbie just hit digital, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago, so you can rent or watch Barbie now on your home TV if you haven't seen it in theaters yet, and I can't wait to watch it again. I enjoyed it immensely, and I'm really excited to talk about it with you.
Yeah, as the Ken to your Barbie, I'm also really excited to talk about it. So before we roll up our sleeves and get too deep into it, Laurel, do your thing.
No, my thing is just we would love to hear from you. So we're on the internet. We're still on Twitter, or the app formerly known as Twitter, also now known as X. Not super active over there right now, just because we're not really sure what's going on with that platform.
But I am on it every day.
Derek is still very active over there. But you can follow us at The Midnight Myth, and we'd love to hear from you. And you can follow Derek at DerekJones198.
That's it.
Great.
Yes. Stop by, say hi to me.
And you can also follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. On Instagram, we're at Midnight Myth Podcast. And you can also find us on the World Wide Web at midnightmyth.com, where you'll also find the digital hubs for The Wheel of Ka and Sleep and Sorcery. I believe we're planning on a new Wheel of Ka in the next couple of weeks or months on Misery. And I'm very excited to hear what you guys have to say about that. So that should be coming down the pike, and we'll keep you posted on those digital platforms. And the other things that you can do to support us are leave us a rating and or a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever you listen. You can also listen to The Wheel of Ka in the Midnight Myth feed or in its own exclusive feed. And you can also listen to Sleep and Sorcery, which is my sleep stories and meditations podcast, which just hit 1 million downloads on podcast players.
Woohoo!
And another 1 million on the meditation app Insight Timer.
Woohoo!
And my book, Sleep and Sorcery, is available for pre-order now. So head over to the midnightmyth.com website. You can find all that information there.
Woohoo! Woohoo! And yes, there is a Wheel of Ka record session scheduled. So we're going to be recording it in the upcoming week. And then we'll see how long it takes to actually edit and post. But it should be up. Our thoughts on misery should be done pretty soon. That'll be up there. Really excited to do that. So let's go on and let's talk about the color pink and all things Barbie. I'll try to recap it. I've only seen it once, so I'll keep it even for the briefest of brief. It will be a brief recap. This is a movie where the toy world Barbie and all of the Barbies live with all of their Kens, and Barbie starts having thoughts and visions of death and existential sort of meltdowns. So she consorts with Weird Barbie and realizes that she's got to go into the human world and find the little girl playing with her because the little girl is putting these ideas in Barbie's head. So she decides to go to the real world and Ken comes with her. And there she realizes it's not the girl who's having the visions, but the girl's mother who's having these sad thoughts about Barbie. Meanwhile, Ken learns of a thing called the patriarchy, which pretty much thinks is the coolest thing ever. So he goes back to the Barbie world to reintroduce the ideas of patriarchy, while Barbie, to trying to heal the mother and daughter, brings them back into the Barbie world to find that the patriarchy and Ken have taken over and subjugated all of the Barbies in the patriarchy. What we then go through is a sort of deprogramming effort where the human mother and daughter and Barbie get together with Weird Barbie and try to unbrainwash all of the Barbies out of the patriarchy. Then they realize that, you know, they do need to change Barbie world because they weren't really too nice to all the Kens, but the patriarchy is out of Barbie world, and Barbie decides that she finally wants to be a real woman, and she ends up joining and becoming a real person and ends with her going to the gynecologist.
That was an excellent recap. You were like nervous about it.
But I definitely was.
You got that. That was so good.
All right. Cool. 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 You know, so thank you. Barbie came out this year, 2023, was the biggest hit of the year. I don't think any movie we could say is bigger up to this point.
Yeah. It's the highest grossing movie of the year. It grossed over $1 billion and it is still chugging along, still making money. And it's going to make a lot of streaming money as well. It is now the highest grossing film by a solo female director in Greta Gerwig, and it is the highest grossing Warner Brothers film of all time, if I remember that correctly. So it surpassed Harry Potter.
And The Dark Knight.
And The Dark Knight, yeah.
Wow.
So it really, really made a ton of money. And we can't talk about Barbie without talking about Barbenheimer. Oppenheimer came out on the same day, the Christopher Nolan biopic of the lead of the Manhattan Project. And between the two of them, have kind of single-handedly resuscitated movie going in a way. You know, that's a big thing to say about two movies that came out in one summer, but this felt like a really big moment for the act of going to the movie theater and the emphasis on the experience of going out and seeing movies, which was feeling like it was faltering even before COVID, and COVID really kind of took that ritual out of a lot of people's lives. So it was wonderful to see these movies do well and see people excited about the event of going to see movies, and also that these were not established movie IPs. Yes, they had tons of star power attached, and Barbie has one of the biggest names, biggest brands associated with it of all time, but these weren't superhero movies. They weren't Star Wars. They were, in a way, independent of the IPs that have been cashing in for the last two decades. So super exciting moment for box office, and I think for movies in general.
Yeah, cool. You touched on a bunch of things that I wanted to talk about there. That's awesome. I want to ask, because we normally ask, does it hold up? It's brand new, and so it's not really fair to ask if it holds up. Why do you think it was as successful as it is? And I think a lot of people believed that the only way to get butts into the theater would be to have what you called standard intellectual property, or IP, which would be another link in the ongoing MCU chain. So it's got to be a superhero thing. It's got to be an established brand. Star Wars, Fast and Furious, all of these like really established franchises that people still go out and spend good hard-earned money to see. Lots of other movies that didn't have that sort of part of this universe continuation seem to have been struggling for so long at the box office. You think of all of the movies that have won Best Picture in the last, I'd say, 5, maybe 10 years even, none of them were monsters at the box office. They were all small, independently made movies divorced from the big franchise machine. And that franchise machine, it's not going to go away. It's still happening. But what do you think it was about Barbie that got it to break through to be one of, if not the most successful Warner Brothers movies of all time? Warner Brothers who has Batman, Warner Brothers who has Harry Potter, Warner Brothers who has a lot of amazing movies in its legacy, lots of popular movies that have millions of fans that have made billions of dollars. Why, of all things, a movie about a doll?
So I think this is a great question, and it's kind of a perfect storm. There are so many ingredients that go into the recipe that really made Barbie smash records and blow everyone out of the water. And I'll touch on a couple of them. I think there is one at the heart that is important to note. But first off, this is a triumph of marketing, right? So the team that marketed Barbie is so intelligent and so tuned in to the zeitgeist that they were able to make it memeable right away. They were able to like really leverage the press tour and the stars that were attached to it, like Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. And that was done in a way that really made the lead up to Barbie and the promotional aspect of it feel very interactive. I think as viewers and as potential viewers of Barbie, we all felt like we were already part of the Barbie experience because we had put our faces in the little, this Barbie is a nuclear physicist meme, or we had interacted with Ryan Gosling's insane Ken press tour in some way. So we already felt very brought into it. There is also the fact that you have real star power attached, and it's unexpected star power. So everyone expected Margot Robbie to eventually play Barbie. Love that she is a producer on it and is a huge driving force behind it getting made and getting made in the way that it was. But then you bring in an unexpected director like Greta Gerwig, who has made films that are on a slightly smaller scale but are always critical darlings, is always highly praised and makes films on similar subject matter, but you would not necessarily expect her to take on a billion-dollar blockbuster or a movie about a doll who is always dressed in pink. So unexpected, and that piqued a lot of interest. You get the nostalgia aspect of a few generations of moviegoers, right? So you have the kids who are now playing with Barbie, who are admittedly not the target audience for the movie, but then you get two or three generations of people who played with Barbie in the past and have very fond memories or even very complicated memories. I have very complex feelings about Barbie as a 30-something woman and a mom. And then on top of all of that, I think one of the key reasons this movie was successful and continues to be successful and should be a model for movies going forward is that it's about women. And this is, we're more than half the population of the world, and yet the movies that are typically tapped for being the blockbuster, for being the summer blowout, are movies that are more often than not skewed towards a male demographic or are more interested in targeting a male demographic than a female demographic. And I think this movie's for everyone. I think this movie's for people of all genders. But the fact that it came out and was like, it's going to be pink, it's going to be fluffy, it's going to be bubblegum, and it is going to get in your face about what being a woman is like, I think that unexpectedly touched a lot of nerves in a really good way. And certainly touched a lot of fifis in a bad way, but that has been more fun. Like Ben Shapiro attacking this has been hilarious and has only added to the kind of cultural capital that this movie is capturing. So those are a couple of the reasons why I think it's been successful also is just a really great movie that is good for a good time. But that's, I think, some of the ingredients that went into it.
Yeah, I love all of that. Excuse me. I do think the Barbenheimer, that became like an internet event where everyone's just like, we're going to see these two movies on opening day. It's a double feature. And these movies couldn't be more different, marketed differently, seemed to be differently, shot differently. And that kind of became this whole, okay, yeah. Like I remember Tom Cruise saying that he had his tickets to Oppenheimer and Barbie and he was doing it. And he had like a movie coming out. I think he had a Mission Impossible movie coming out too. And even him's like, yeah, I'm going to go see the Barbenheimer. And I think that was a really phenomenal organic digital community event. I don't want to just simply call that marketing because it was invented by fans and shared by fans.
Yeah, that was completely grassroots.
Absolutely. And it's an example in a world where so many examples of social media are what it is doing wrong in the world. We often forget these moments of when it gets something right. And this was an example of when it got something right. Fans spliced the trailers together. They spliced the posters together. It was funny and weird, and it became a thing. And everybody wanted to participate in that thing. And it happened, just so happened, that both of the movies, now I haven't seen Oppenheimer yet, so I'm going purely by reviews, that both the movies were home runs. And so this whole event happened, and I think part of the reason Barbie had the power that it did is once people had opted in to the I want to do the Barbenheimer thing via word of mouth, via reviews online, via positive tweets or X's or threads or whatever you're calling your app these days, everyone started talking about this movie being like, you have to see it. I had zero desire to go to the theater and see Barbie. None whatsoever. Definitely wanted to see it. Greta Gerwig is amazing. Was not at all going to refuse to see it, wanted to see it. But to me, that's something I could have waited till I could have rented or bought at home and streamed. Didn't seem like a must-see movie to me until, Laurel, you saw it and you're like, no, this is a must-see. You went with your best friend. I was watching our son, Arthur, and you came home, couldn't stop talking about it. Then I'm like, okay, well, now I got to go see this. I have to go see it now. And I think a lot of what happened is due to the fact that this movie is, at its core, it's just a lot of fun. It's a movie that people want to see. And this sort of online event got people to go to the theater. And then once that happened, everyone's just like, have you seen it? Have you seen it? Everywhere I went, whether it was online or in the physical world, people are like, have you seen Barbie yet? And I'm like, nope, I'm on it. I'm going to go see it, until I eventually went and saw it. And I think that is a testament to the great storytelling prowess that's at display in Barbie. This movie can be enjoyed on multiple layers. It is simply funny. It is witty and it is funny and it's beautiful. It is almost all practical effects that were built in studios by artists, and it just sings off of the screen when you see it. It is a movie that is benefited by seeing in the big screen because the artistry behind every single frame just pops out of the screen. You mentioned the cast. The cast is phenomenal. I was never a big Ryan Gosling fan. I don't know why, because he was stupendous. He stole the show for me. Even though, you know, Margot Robbie is as close to a goddess as any mortal could be, you know, like, she is phenomenal and was great. I knew Margot Robbie was going to be great. I knew that. I had no doubt. She's great in everything. Fun fact, the last movie I saw in the theater before Barbie was Birds of Prey in January of 2020, right before lockdowns happened. So the last movie I saw was Margot Robbie was the main character in it. And the next one I saw, Margot Robbie was the main character. So super fan of hers. She is phenomenal. But Ryan Gosling as Ken kind of stole the show for me. And because I just wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting to just laugh out loud at everything the Ken character did.
He was sublime.
He was sublime. Yes, he was. You know, playing his song, looking into Barbie's eyes. And it was great. And then, so you can just enjoy it on the, it's well made, it's funny, it is super entertaining, it's a really cool story. it is Pinocchio. You know, it is borrowing heavily from the old story of Pinocchio, where Geppetto makes a wooden doll, wishes for it to come to life. It does. And Pinocchio goes out into a journey into the real world and doesn't really know how to handle it. And then in the end gets to become a real boy. And so, like, it mirrors that story in a lot of ways. It flips a lot of the narratives in that Barbie goes out into the real world and doesn't really get corrupted the way that Pinocchio does. But yes, it's taking the story of Pinocchio and updating it for Barbie. And I think that's great. And then we can understand the movie as what it says about what it means to be a woman in the world, what it means to be a woman who plays with toys in the world, what it means for femininity and feminism. And it really says a lot on that. And I certainly want you to take the lead on that points there. But I think you can also enjoy it as a movie that is meditating very deeply on the role of women in the world and the role men play in that world as well, and what men can do to help shape, form, or destroy the experiences of women.
That's amazing. I love everything that you just said, and I want to come back to a couple of points that you made. First of all, just calling out the practical nature of the film. It looks so spectacular, and they built those Barbie houses. Like, there is so much craftsmanship and beauty that is truly practical and feels, in a way, kind of old Hollywood or feels very classic film. And Greta speaks a lot about her influences on this and the movies that kind of shaped and inspired her visual understanding of Barbie. And I would recommend looking at those. But it just truly just leaps off the screen. So it really is a great thing to see in the theaters, not to mention the musical numbers as well. Just make you want to get up and dance. But I also, and this is a bit of a boomerang here, but back a little bit to the kind of groundswell of Barbenheimer. We've talked a lot, especially in these meditations, about what folklore is and its role within a lot of the things that we discuss. And I really feel like Barbenheimer is one of those classic and amazing examples of folklore in the digital age. Because if we think of folklore as an informal kind of traditional culture or a creation of cultural waves and things that are culturally significant and are practiced that are not written down or not set up in books, are not prescribed. They just kind of organically arise from a folk group. And this was a moment where this groundswell of activity started happening on the internet, and it happened through memes, it happened through this kind of word of mouth, as you mentioned, and then became a thing that people did and ritualized. They bought their tickets and they went and they saw Oppenheimer, and then they had lunch and cried into their cosmopolitans and their mangotinis, and then they went to Barbie. And people dressed up for different things. People approached it in a really formalized, traditional way and made this into a kind of ritual practice. And I think it's going to be talked about for a long time. People are going to be like, this is the next Barbenheimer. Or there will be Barbenheimer midnight movies that people will go to. And maybe shadow casts will perform them like they do with Rocky Horror. So that's one of those really interesting moments that you can't predict and that marketing cannot create. It has to happen organically, and it has to come out of the community and out of the folk. And so that's just a really cool and interesting thing to point to happening in our culture right now. And again, you know, we were ripe for this. We're coming out of a really devastating pandemic. This is the first summer where, you know, we're still having new variants and we're still having new waves and people are still getting sick, but they've lifted the state of emergency in most places. So in a lot of spaces, it's starting to feel like normal life again. It's starting to feel like 2019 again. And there's this craving for connection, this craving for community. And Barbenheimer made this really ripe space to go into and return to the things that we loved before we were all shut in our houses. And that's to visit dream houses and history. So I just think that was a cool thing that organically happened on the internet.
Wonderful. Folklore. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to pivot a little bit here. Some time ago, Martin Scorsese published an article, and I forget what newspaper. I want to say the New York Times, but I could be making that up. But essentially, he wanted to get his thoughts out there about the status of cinema. And he made an argument that cinema was dead. And largely speaking, he was pointing to the MCU as the reason cinema is dead. Now, this obviously ruffled a lot of MCU fans the wrong way. After all, he was kind of taking a shot saying that the MCU isn't cinema. And if you're a diehard MCU fan, I get why you were like, hey, who are you to, like, you know, speak poorly about this thing that I love? But I do think Martin Scorsese has earned the right to hold complicated opinions about cinema, considering he's one of the greatest cinematic storytellers of all time. And he has certainly made some of the greatest art in cinema. And when we use that term cinema, it really does seem to distinguish itself from the term movie. And I think that's really what was happening there. Martin Scorsese was saying, hey, the MCU, they're movies. He called them theme park rides. He said they were a lot of fun and he actually liked them, but it wasn't cinema. Cinema kind of connotes a little bit of a higher form of the art where you're really trying to do or say something. And his argument was, everyone wants to go on the theme park ride. Nobody wants to go to the cinema anymore. And whether that's true or not, we could debate. But let's, for the sake of this argument, for the sake of this conversation, assume that he was at least kind of onto something there. Don't want to sit there and say he's 100% right. After all, I do like the MCU too. I've seen a lot of MCU movies in the theaters. But let's just say he's onto something, that there was a sort of corroded element in the business of making Hollywood-produced movies that lowered them to out of the realm of cinema and more into the realm of theme park rides. Has Barbie and Oppenheimer, has that changed now? Is it different? Will we see studios realizing, hey, if you make really great movies and you market them really smartly, you can expect people to come out and see them in large amounts of numbers? Or do you think this is a blip in the radar and we're going to go back to churning out intellectual property that is bankable, that everyone will want to see? Are we going to go back to Transformers, Star Wars, Fast and Furious, Marvel? And I say that aside for Fast and Furious, loving all of those. I like Fast and Furious. I don't love it, but I say that with respect to those, not to denigrate them like I think they stink, because I don't think they stink, especially Star Wars. It really matters to me. But have we reached the high watermark of the franchise bankable intellectual property? And are we going to see something more like what we saw in the late 90s, early 2000s, where you saw really huge movies like Gladiator or American Beauty a little earlier in the 90s, Pulp Fiction? These really phenomenal movies have really outrageously good commercial success.
I think it's a great question. It really does remain to be seen. We should also note that we're still in the midst of some ongoing strikes that show no sign of reaching an agreement right now. So I'm sure studios are quaking in their boots, or someone is quaking in their boots. And so it's very hard to say what's going to come on the other side of this. I don't think that those IPs are going to go away, or at least go away quickly. What I do hope is that there is at least some small shift that the bigger studios will start to pick up, maybe one a year of these slightly quote unquote riskier. They're not going to take risks, right? They want to make what's going to make money. We've already seen that studios are picking up things like Polly Pocket and other toy movies, because they're like, oh, Barbie made money because it's a movie about a toy people love, because they're completely misunderstanding what the actual appeal of Barbie was. So I feel complex about it. I don't know that we're going to see major industry shifts, but hopefully some of the conversation around this can turn the tide and at least open up space for more interesting stories to be told and more interesting filmmakers to make those things. Just on the subject of that Martin Scorsese moment, I have some kind of nuanced feelings about what he said, especially because I'm someone who loves and appreciates quote-unquote trash in some spaces. Like, I can be a snob sometimes, but I also think there is a ton of value that comes with things that are pulp, or at least were considered pulp at one time and now are considered high art. It's just a matter of perspective, in my opinion. But the real breakthrough in that argument, and I can't remember if Scorsese said this or if I heard it elsewhere, but the dividing line, I think, is not just theme park ride. It's when you start calling films content, then we lose a lot of the kind of respect that we have for the art of storytelling and the craft that goes into the making of these great stories. So even if they are crazy, you know, over the top visual effects, major high concept, if we start calling them content and not stories, that just feels like we are really relegating it to, it's just something to pass time and make money.
And let's be honest, though. I mean, that's true, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that is why this business exists, because we, as audience members, we want to be entertained. We want to go to a movie, eat some popcorn, watch an awesome story, and then go home and talk about it all night. You know, when we saw Barbie together, we were visiting your family in Colorado, and the whole family went and saw it. We went and saw Barbie. Then we sat around, had a homemade meal, drank beer and wine and whiskey, and talked about Barbie all night. It was awesome. You know, so like that event, you know, matters. Even if it is something that was just like, this is to entertain us and we got to talk about, we're talking about it still. So I think it is true that when you're evaluating the business of making stories, that if you're a studio and you're going to put $250 million investment, you're going to want to hedge your best against that, because that is still an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure you get a positive return on that investment. And no doubt things have changed. Millennials grew into adults, and we were willing to shell out money to go see movies, but we wanted to see the things we wanted. And that were things that were nostalgic, that linked to our past, things that gave us these sort of warm and fuzzies we wanted to see. I mean, I read the Infinity Saga comic books when I was 12. Why at the age of like 30 did I need to see them in the theater? Because I just needed it. I just needed it to have that, right? So the studios have been giving us what we want. What I think we have seen with Barbie and with Oppenheimer is that we have a deeper palate than what I thought was previously believed. That, okay, we've had this long run of just give us the stuff we want, the way we want it, when we want it, and give us a lot of it. I think now there is a genuine appetite out there for something else, for things to evolve and things to change. And I think that appetite is a market force. I don't think it's going to change. It's no secret that Marvel has had its worst year as far as ticket sales. It's not bad. You know, they're still printing money. The MCU is not going anywhere. I don't want it to go away too, you know, but it's no secret that it's been not as successful as it once was, both critically and commercially, when the most popular movie of the year is a movie about a doll dealing with the patriarchy. I mean, that says something about who we are as audience members. And to me, what that says is we're ready for a challenge. We're ready for something new. We want something different. We have so much of what we have craved and demanded. There's so much Star Wars. There's so much Marvel. There's so much Harry Potter. There's so much of this stuff. We have so much of it that I can say, at least for me, I'm ready. I don't want any of that to go away. And unlike Martin Scorsese, I don't look down on it. You know, I love a lot of that stuff. I mean, we're planning a Star Wars episode. You know, so we are going to continue to talk about it. We're going to do a Star Wars episode coming up shortly. We've been wanting to do one for a while. So to me, though, I do think a page has been turned. The audience has shown up and said, no, we will go see. What we want is quality. We want a really great story told by great storytellers that really resonates and that matters. The fact that the online alt-right lost their mind about Barbie meant it did something right. Like, to me, for Barbie, like, on radar, but not necessarily need to see in the theater, that's like, oh, they're burning Barbies? All these trolls are burning Barbies? Okay, so it had to have done something really right if it made them that mad, you know?
Like, yeah, which I think is an indicator of a really interesting shift, too, because at the end of the day, the Barbie movie is not radical. It is not saying anything radical. It is saying some very, very simple and, dare I say, obvious things about the patriarchy. I'm not disparaging it. I think that stuff needs to be said because it made Ben Shapiro burn Barbies and because for a huge swath of the population, that's either their introduction or the first time they've taken, you know, feminism 101 seriously. And if that's what we need in the mainstream to help turn a dial, because not everybody's going to have the appetite necessarily for Poor Things that's just tearing up the film festival circuit right now. And I understand deals with a lot of the same messages, but in a more radical way. Mainstream is not going to have the appetite for that, but they do have the appetite for Barbie, which is a really good thing that we're going to start to move that dial. And then maybe we can start to expand the breadth of things that we can say about gender, about patriarchy, and about just common sense, like equality. Like, let's all respect people as human beings and understand that there's difficulty in cognitive dissonance in being a person of any gender in this world.
Honestly, when I realized that the patriarchy wasn't about horses, I lost all of my interest.
Yeah, as most do.
Yeah. I really love all that. I saw out there online, and some people were a little miffed that Barbie didn't go further in its feminist message. And, you know, all due respect, it's like, I thought that was a little strange to me. It felt a little off because, you know, the movie tells the message it wants to tell. You know, you don't really have control over that. And this movie was staunchly criticizing the patriarchy, you know, from moment one to the end. And it was staunchly criticizing creating a hierarchical society based on gender and how to debunk, like gives like a how to debunk the patriarchy, which is like call out its BS. And I just thought like, huh, well, what would you have liked the movie to have been? You know, like to me, when you look at the message of a movie and what it's saying, it clearly is saying patriarchy is wrong. What else would one really want? I found that odd. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the space that I'm in is that I agree that this movie did not actually go very far in terms of feminism, but it made its point extremely clear and made it very broad and approachable and accessible because this script got by Mattel. Like this script got by Warner Brothers to become the biggest movie of the year and one of the biggest movies of the decade. And so we have to make it palatable and approachable to allow people in.
Yeah, it's kind of like think of Jurassic Park and think of the science in Jurassic Park. It's completely and totally bananas. None of it makes sense. But here it is, you know, saying the most cautionary tale about, you know, humankind meddling with things they don't know in nature. And it's almost like saying, you know, they really needed to do a better job in the biology of Jurassic Park. It's like, no, not really. And to me, it's just like, you need to do a better job with the feminism of Barbie. And I'm like, it's already feminist. That's enough. You know, that's enough. It doesn't need to be a college lecture. Because it's a movie. It is supposed to entertain us. Its job, first and foremost, is to tell a great story about a hero, Barbie, and the journey that she goes on when she first realizes that a thing like death exists in the universe. And that journey ends with her embracing mortality and embracing the imperfection of the human body, you know, and becoming a real human being. And so to me, I look at that and say like, hey, you know, like the question to me isn't how far did it or did it not go, is did it tell a good story and did it tell it well? And if it did, what does that story mean? And if it says something, that's a bonus. And this one says a lot right from the beginning.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, in many ways, some of the most, not radical, but some of the most significant things it said about feminism were not in the script itself, but were just in what Barbie Land looks like. Like, Barbie Land is so actively and deliberately inclusive and has such a beautiful broad spectrum of what it means to be a woman and to be beautiful and to be admirable, that it does not draw any attention to, right? There's a black woman as president in Barbie Land, and there is a fat Barbie and she's beautiful, and there's a trans Barbie and she's beautiful, and there's a Barbie who uses a wheelchair and she's beautiful, and all of this is just what it looks like, and they are all Barbie and they're all beautiful and they're all worthy of respect, except for Weird Barbie, because they call her Weird Barbie behind her back and to her face, but she comes in at the end too. And then the fact that at the end of the day, after all of this has transpired and patriarchy has crumbled and fallen apart, President Barbie is like, I don't think we should go back to the way things were either, because that wasn't fair. That wasn't actually equal. There is room for so much nuance in the dismantling of patriarchy, which, as it turns out, hurts men too. Like, everyone who participates in patriarchy is disenfranchised by it, even those who are purportedly empowered by it. So by dismantling that BS, calling it out and bringing a little bit more inclusivity and a little bit more nuance to your community, you can lift everybody up. Ken can find out who he is beyond just horses, girlfriend, and beach. So there is a really kind of beautiful space that it lands at that is, in its own way, I think, a really powerful statement on feminism and patriarchy.
I totally agree. One of the things I thought about the message of it that I like so much is that it actively included men and asked the question of, hey, men, what are we in this patriarchal civilization? And what can we do and how do we find ourselves? Because at no point in that are they saying it's not okay to be a man. At no point is it saying Ken shouldn't love horses and brewski beers, you know, and sports. It's saying that, hey, Ken needs to figure out what he is outside of this system. He needs to figure out who he is and not who he was programmed to be, which was just adoring Barbie. And that offers a positive vision of masculinity in a movie about feminism that I thought was really phenomenal. The fact that it really did include and needs men to act and says, no, you can find who you are. You don't need to be tied to this system either, because it may seem like it's great because you're on top, but in reality, Ken wasn't happy,
right,
on top of the civilization. He wasn't a well-adjusted, happy, self-actualized doll. He was miserable.
He was not enjoying every night being guy's night.
He was not.
Yeah.
You know, he did not like that. So I think it takes a step further in other pieces of art that I have seen about feminism to really include men. I think that's part of the reason why a lot of men can go see it and feel like it says something to them and can feel refreshed coming out of it, because it's not just a whole movie of, wow, men just stink. You know, it's a whole movie of like, no, it's the system that stinks and we need to fix it together.
Yeah. And men need to be empowered in that way too. Mm-hmm. Men need, you know, to be shown that they actually can have an impact in, you know, the effects of patriarchy. So I love that.
Give me some love for your like favorite moments.
Sure. So I do want to just talk about like, lots of favorite moments. I mean, I'm just Ken. I can't stop watching it. It's the best musical number I have ever seen. Every single thing that comes out of Ryan Gosling's mouth is beautiful. I do love Gloria's monologue about the cognitive dissonance of being a woman, and the fact that that in itself is enough to deprogram brainwashed Barbies, because those are things that I think about on a daily basis, how like incredibly difficult it is to do anything right when you're a woman. And you know, not saying that I didn't experience this before I was a mom, but I feel like I experience it in a more heightened way now that I have a kid, just because the levels of judgment and the intensity on either side of any choice that you make as a mom, I feel like it's just even more intense than it was before I was a parent. So just moving through that and then hearing it voiced really eloquently and simply in a place that a lot of people were going to hear it, I thought was really powerful for me. I also am just really glad I got to see it with my mom because I really didn't want her seeing it without me just because it speaks very much to what it's like to be a mother of daughters. But I will also just say I'm so deeply moved by Barbie's choice in the end to become human. And that is a moment that really resonated with me as something I've seen happen a few times in different stories in the last few years. That is a, like, it's an embrace and an admiration and an exaltation of the mundane, that, you know, Barbie sees what being a human is like flash before her eyes, and it's clips from the crew of Barbie sent those to Greta, like home videos of their lives, their weddings, their babies, jumping into pools, you know, hanging out with people that they love, barbecues, birthday parties, those very simple day-to-day things that are also these earth-shaking, life-changing moments that mean humanity, and that Barbie affirms that is really special. I feel like Greta Gerwig has a really, really specific way of exalting the mundane, which she did in Lady Bird and she did in Little Women as well. It also reminded me a lot of Everything Everywhere All at Once and the book Circe by Madeline Miller, these affirmations of mortality, of mundanity, and those things being kind of magic in their own way. What about you? Favorite moments?
Wow. I'd say drop the mic, but they're on stands.
I just love Barbie so much.
Yeah. Drop the mic, but they're on stands. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I already said that I loved watching Ken. I absolutely loved the beach battle, musical number. I mean, that was probably my favorite bit in the whole thing. Yeah. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think I said most of what I want to say. Just I love Barbie and I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed this meditation. It was tons of fun to record. And until next time.